You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
We have Ambassador Karen Mossen-Lechner, who was appointed Ambassador of the Netherlands to Malaysia in August last year. The Netherlands will have its general election this Wednesday, 15th of March, and today we explore the rise of the so-called right-wing populism in the Dutch Kingdom and what this means for the rest of Europe and indeed Malaysia. Ambassador Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Now, the polls show that Firebrand Geert Wilders' anti-immigration and anti-Islamic Party for Freedom, or PVV, is neck and neck in the polls with Prime Minister Mark Rutte's People's Party for Freedom and Democracy. Is this a cause for concern?
Well, maybe it's good first to explain a little bit about the Dutch electoral system. Because it's different from other systems, we've seen elections in recently, such as United States, UK, where you really have a two-party system, winner takes all. We have a proportional election system in the Netherlands, and we have only actually one electoral district for the whole country and all the Dutch people voting from abroad. So every vote counts, and in other countries as well, of course. But it means that if a person or a party gets 0.67% of the votes that are cast, 150th, they will get one seat in parliament. We have 150 seats, and they're just equally divided among all the voters. That means that we have a lot of parties in our parliament. And we have at the moment, I think it's a record of 16 parties represented in a Dutch parliament. We have a lot of parties also now participating in the elections. It's 28 parties in total. There were even 81 parties who, first of all, indicated they wanted to participate. Some of them actually did not get the required number of signatures, but still 28. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. And of those 28, we expect, according to the latest polls, that about 14 will get a place in our future parliament, which will means that we actually have a lot of fragmentation in our future parliament. And so it also means that we have a coalition to form. Now, that's an important word here.
So what you're suggesting is that if Geert Wilders' party wins some amount of seats, he will still have to convince some of the other coalition, some of the other parties to form a coalition. But isn't this still a worrying thing that if they win some seats and win a lot of seats and have the ability to form a government, that will still be worrying for Netherlands and the rest of Europe as well?
According to the latest polls, it is the party of our current prime minister, Mark Rutte, which is the Liberal Party, who is leading in the polls, and followed, as you mentioned, by the right wing party of Mr. Geert Wilders, either of them, if they become the largest party, will have to find at least three or four other parties to find a coalition, which also means that you have to compromise. If you want to form a coalition, you have to be able to actually to move to the center. So what we will see is that the coalition government in the Netherlands, in any case, whatever the outcome will be, will have a moderating effect. Because, the largest party in the polls at the moment is at about 16% of the vote, which is not that much. Mm-hmm. You also see, for instance, the party of Mr. Wilders is gaining a little bit in the polls, but it's all polls, of course, in relation to the situation at the last elections, but not that dramatically. There's not that much of change in the political landscape.
Nevertheless, I think the case is that this sense of disenfranchisement across Europe, and not only Europe, but also we saw recently in the victory of President Donald Trump in America, shows that many people are dissatisfied about what's happening. But it's very surprising for the Netherlands, because the Dutch have for a long time been believers in equality and human rights. Why are they now so concerned about immigration, and what gives Geert Wilders the impetus to go on?
Yeah. Well, I think many Dutch people still are very much supporting equality, freedom, human rights, the basic values that we've been standing for a long time, and I don't think that is going to change. But you also see some dissatisfaction with the way things are changing, and there are many changes in the world. And you don't only see it in the Netherlands, you see it everywhere. We see the effects of globalization. So for the first time in years, we see a lot of debate at the moment on culture, on identity questions, on what is the identity and of the in our case of the Netherlands. And isn't the identity of the Netherlands changing? Well, I think actually it's good that these questions are being asked and that people are addressing it. But also a lot of people actually in this discussion reaffirm that this openness and this respect for human rights is part of our identity. So it's also strengthening this side of the political spectre. But you see, there is some concerns. There's also some... Maybe some diminishing support for more traditional parties. People are not that much more loyal to a political party as they used to be in the past. The political parties were formed in the late 19th, traditional parties, in the late 19th, 20th century. And at that time, people really following that party. And at this moment, they look more at what am I feeling now? What person do I like? Is this person reflecting the ideas I have on things that I really think are important in life? And they're voting for new parties and new movements as well.
That's right. It's kind of like to take a word from the tech sector, you know, it's kind of like a disruption to the old parties and the old way of doing things. And this is very relevant because right across Europe in 2017, many countries are going for election. You're talking about Italy, France, Germany, and the Netherlands is one of the first to go for elections this year. Are you comfortable with the idea that the Netherlands is going to be a test case for the rest of Europe?
Yes, well, we are the first to have elections, so that makes us, I think, in the eyes of many people, a test case. As I said, because of our electoral system and because of actually the widespread political feelings of the people, and there's wide support for many different parties and ideas, I'm not sure if that representative for all of Europe. And I expect actually that the Dutch elections will not lead to a major change in politics or major actually surprises. I think actually that the next elections that are coming up, the French elections, might be an even larger and a more interesting test case for Europe as a whole.
And of course, in contention is the debate of whether the European Union as a bloc, as we know now, would break up, because at the margins, there are some polls that are coming up in the Netherlands as well, that I know that there are some very established polls in Holland that a lot of people support the idea of an EU. But at the margin, some polls, for example, the Bruges polls, say that 56% of the Dutch people don't agree with the notion of the European Union as a bloc. What do you say to this?
Yes, well, I haven't really been able to study this Bruges poll, but what I heard from it just now is actually that it's a poll by quite a conservative anti-EU group, so I'm not sure how representative that is. As you say, there are many polls, and the latest polls that I've been following, and actually it's been the consistent outcome of many polls in recent years, is that there is, at least in the Netherlands, still widespread support and maybe even growing support for the EU.
And why is that? Because we've seen in Brexit that surprises can happen. Is this kind of sentiment also something that's common among the Dutch?
Well, there are of course people who are seeing Brussels as a problem, as an institute that will hamper our possibilities to do the things that we think are important nationally, but that's not a growing group of people, and we also see that a large majority of the Dutch people know how important the EU is for us. They like the ideas of having open borders. We are a small country. You would like to travel abroad quickly. They see that it's economically very important for us. I mean, we are a very open economy. We're a trading country. we have the 18th economy in the world, and it's mainly thanks to the fact that we are a gateway to Europe, to the European Union, and the port of Rotterdam is actually shipping its goods that enter the port to all parts of Europe. Mm-hmm. That's helping us a lot. It's helping our economy a lot. It's creating a lot of jobs in the Netherlands. So people realize how important the European Union is. Apart from that, we're facing a lot of challenges these days in the world, in the field of climate change, in the field of insecurity, instability, and we cannot solve these problems on our own.
And what do you think, what are your sentiments of whether the EU will break up or not? Because certainly this sense of right-wing and anti-establishment sentiment is very palpable for the rest of Europe. So you don't think that there would be a Netherlands exit or Nexit, but do you think that EU as a bloc would hold?
Yes, I think the EU will hold, and of course, no one is able to predict the future. But my gut feeling is it will. There's still widespread support for the EU, and there may be even growing support, as I said, because I think the Brexit. Of course, it still has to materialize as well, but just the outcome of the Brexit referendum has also made many people realize what we have to lose. And I see what's now happening in the UK. There's a lot of polarization there. It's not good for the economy, what's happening there. And it's raising a lot of questions. And it also makes people actually feel maybe this crisis that the EU is something that is actually very important that we have to work on and to fight for.
We're speaking with Karin Mossen-Lechner, Her Excellency Ambassador of the Netherlands to Malaysia. Coming up next, we will ask the question of what does it mean to have a Dutch identity? We're speaking with Her Excellency Karin Mossen-Lechner, Ambassador of the Netherlands to Malaysia. Ambassador, there is a diplomatic spat that erupted over the weekend between the Netherlands and Turkey. This started when Turkish ministers were barred from rallying Turks living in the Netherlands to give more power to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. What I want to ask is, how do you square the banning of these Turkish ministers with notions of freedom of speech, which is so dearly held in the Netherlands?
Well, first of all, maybe I can explain a little bit. I mean, it was not just banning ministers from speaking. We had a discussion ongoing with Turkey because Turkey had made clear that it wanted to have a political rally in the Netherlands in a public space, and we know it is the issue that the rally was going to be about is an issue that is quite controversial. Also, among the large Turkish community that's living in the Netherlands, we have about 400,000 people from Turkish descent living in the Netherlands, and some of them are in favor of the referendum that's going to be held in Turkey next month. Others are very much against it, so it's a very heated and controversial issue. Our government actually decided that it would pose problems for public order and safety if there would be such a large political rally. So they asked the Turkish government to reconsider. We were talking with Turkey about alternatives. We wanted to offer them a smaller scale kind of a platform. We asked them to do it behind closed doors. And while these talks were still ongoing from our side, and the Turkish government started to threaten with sanctions.
And has there never been any large demonstrations or protests being held in the Netherlands before?
Yes, of course, we have very often large-scale demonstrations. But we also had an incident just a few months ago with Turkish people actually clashing themselves among themselves over things that are happening in Turkey. And, of course, those are things that you don't want to import in your own country, these kind of clashes. And even though our politicians have not mentioned it, and it's my own, I think no country would like to have a large-scale demonstration that could get out of hand just a few days before you have your own national elections.
I'm just wondering.
You want to have, of course, stability, and you don't want. And there were really serious concerns about safety.
But to me, this is something that's really glaring in a country where freedoms, not only freedoms of speech, but freedoms in general, are really valued. And it's quite interesting because this also relates to the case of Prime Minister Mark Rutte supporting a decision not to hire a bus driver for refusing to shake hands with women. And the PM was referring to a full page ad in the newspaper, and he said that people should behave normally or go away. And the Prime Minister also talked about integration and adopting Dutch values. Could you give us an idea of whether this is a clash of cultures, and what exactly do Dutch values mean?
Yes, but maybe first I would like to go back to this Turkish case, because you say it's... I mean, I really think that the Dutch have done everything to offer the Turkish even the possibility to do some sort of a political rally. And Turkey just wanted to do one thing, do it in his own way. And we're really sad about the way they behaved. And in no other country you would be able to do a political rally on a place of your choice without the permission of the local authorities, because they have to be able to manage that. And I'm very sad that it happened that way. And it's not about not granting anyone a stage. It's just that you have to do it in a way that is responsible. And the Turkish were not willing to talk to us about a responsible way to do that. So very unfortunate, and I'm very sad about it myself, because I have a lot of Turkish friends as well. And I really hope that this situation is not going to escalate and not going to get any worse. Mm-hmm. And then you refer to a letter of our Prime Minister. I think he's been very outspoken, and he believes it himself, that people who are in the Netherlands also have to who are part of the Dutch society. Also have what he always says: behave normal. Yes, to abide also by the rules of the country, and the rules are actually quite wide and open and flexible. And the only thing is, we want everyone to respect each other.
But that suggests that other cultures are not normal. And in Malaysia, I think we are still grappling with this diversity of cultures we have here. So I'm just wondering whether you can offer any insight as to what it means to have Dutch values and, under the notion of behaving normally and accepting and adopting the culture of the place that you're in.
Yes, well, it doesn't imply that other cultures are not normal. And I think our Prime Minister is someone who is very open to other cultures as well. It's just if people are not willing to be living up to the rules that we have, for instance, to people with... Yeah, it's also a controversial issue here, I know, but with who are homosexual in our country, those issues arise.
I just want to raise the point of, the freedom to practice, the right to practice your own religion. And if
that's not an issue at all. And
if someone finds that because of religious practices that they're not allowed to shake hands with a person of the opposite sex, will that be acceptable in a place like Holland?
Well, I'm really saying that in the Netherlands is one of the countries where I think all the basic rights of people are respected, and especially also the religious rights of people, and we give all the religions actually the possibility to practice their religion. And to do it in a free way. So we have all the religions represented. We have schools even for all the different religions. We offer everyone the possibility to practice their religion. But I think this was a case about a public space in a public function, where my minister said, okay, we respect women as well. And I think in a public space, all the women need to be treated with respect. In his view, that means also shaking a hand. But I don't think that means that we have to generalize that much and say we don't respect or give freedom to religions, because that's a very important issue in my country. And we've come from a long way, actually. The Netherlands was one of the first countries to... accept the Jewish people from Protestant groups when the country was still Catholic. So religious freedom is an issue that is very important in my country, and it's very well and deeply ingrained in the society as well.
We have Karin Mossen-Lechner, Ambassador of the Netherlands to Malaysia, And Ambassador, the economic relations between Malaysia and Holland have improved through the years. Holland is today one of Malaysia's top three trading partners. And Holland has many multinational corporations that are household names in Malaysia, for example, Unilever, Philips and Shell. Where would the business and trade go from here?
Well, I hope it will go up further. Yes, now we see really we already have a lot of economic cooperation, and we've seen in the past few years that both trade and investments are further on the rise, and that's something, of course, that we would like to see. I don't know if you've been following the recent publications by Maida of the investment figures. China last year was the largest investor in FDI terms, but the Netherlands was ranking second, we're of course very happy to see that. It's maybe good to note that the EU as a whole was actually the largest investor in Malaysia.
How did it happen? How did Holland rise up so many notches as far as trade? Was it some targeted effort between the two governments?
Well, I have to say that the Dutch are a big investor in many countries. We're a large receiver in our country of foreign direct investments, but we're also a large source of FDI worldwide. And it has to do with our open economy. I think the Dutch society has been very open to FDI. We're a very competitive economy, and a lot of international companies like to go to the Netherlands to set up regional offices, regional headquarters there. So that explains for a large part of the FDI. But there's also, of course, a long-lasting relationship with Malaysia, and that dates even further back than our diplomatic ties that are 60 years this year. But we also have a long-lasting economic relationship. For instance, Shell has been here in this country for over 125 years now, working together with your oil and gas sector. We have palm oil companies from Malaysia in the Netherlands who've been there for a very long time already. So we see that those ties are very intense. There are many issues where we can work together. And I think Malaysia and the Netherlands are a little bit similar, maybe. I think like the Netherlands is maybe the gateway to the EU in a large extent. Malaysia could be the gateway to ASEAN. It's strategically positioned. So for us, it's also a good hub in this region.
Mm-hmm. Your mention of palm oil is very interesting because Malaysia is in the process of trying to endorse a policy where we put palm oil into our vehicles for biodiesel. And I read that the Netherlands is going to try to ban the sales of petrol and diesel vehicles. First of all, are you really going to do that? And secondly, what do you think of the idea of putting palm oil into vehicles?
Well, the first question, are we really going to do that? Everything, of course, depends on the outcome of the elections, because things might change after elections. That's the idea of elections. So let's see what will happen after that. But I think there's a clear intention, yes, to ban the use of diesel. Secondly, there is some controversy about actually using food in your cars as a fuel. Because we foresee that the world will actually need a lot of these oils for consumption for the growing world population, and it's not a very good thing if it's going to be put in the cars for fuel if it's not necessary, if there are good alternatives, and we think there are good alternatives as well.
Mm. Ambassador, Holland also helped Malaysia in the shooting down of the MH17 investigation. What kind of insights can you give us as to how to find a resolution to this? As I understand it, Russia is against the setting up of a tribunal in the United Nations.
Yes, well, we're working very closely and very intensely together with Malaysia on this issue. I myself have been working in the Netherlands on MH17 before I came here. I was coordinating in the foreign ministry, and I already worked very closely together with many partners in Malaysia. We are looking together with Malaysia, Australia, Ukraine and Belgium in a joint investigation team into the whole case. There's a criminal investigation ongoing. We hope it will be finalized. I cannot give an exact date because that's, of course, in the hands of the prosecutors. But sometime at the end of this year, maybe beginning of next year. And then it's time for a next phase, which will be a prosecution phase. And yes, we try to get set up a UN tribunal. And your mission in New York has been really wonderful, as actually in trying to steer that through the Security Council. But unfortunately, it was vetoed by Russia. So we're now looking at alternatives. I cannot say too much about it, but we're working very closely together with Malaysia.
Thank you so much for your time. And that was Karen Mossen-Lechner, Ambassador of the Netherlands to Malaysia, on this morning's Breakfast Grill. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.